and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. In this episode, I'm introducing you to Mike Francis, co-founder of Nanotech Inc., a Houston-based material science company that just raised $5 million in its recent seed round. Mike and I discuss raising money during a pandemic, how he's set on fireproofing the entire state of California, and why he's confident Houston is the right city to grow his startup into a global success. Mike, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Natalie, and thank you for everything that you do for the Houston innovation scene, as well as stories like ourselves.
So before we really talk in, about the kind of nuts and bolts of everything, can you just set up your story, your background, and how you came to co-found Nanotech?
Yeah, so I have a background in oil and gas. So I was in the corporate world for about 10 years, and I was sitting in my office looking at my paycheck and thinking about my benefits and my three kids at home and knowing that I could probably never become an entrepreneur with those life issues. And at that moment, my wife, she texted me and she said, "I support you, go do it, go follow your dreams." And the very next day, resigned from my corporate job, became very poor overnight, didn't have much of a plan, but it ended up working out. So I started a consulting company called Verise International, and we built a network of university professors across the U.S. Also started a Houston company called Hopdrop. So Hopdrop started in December of 2017, and we do craft beer delivery across Houston, and we also bring craft beer from Dallas, San Antonio, and Austin to Houston. And during that time, when I was working with the various academics and professors, I got connected into, you know, the science organizations, I got connected into the research organizations, and found this unbelievable technology. I hadn't seen anything like it before. What I saw was a video of a flame being introduced into a person's hand that was coated with basically a paint, and nothing was happening to that person's hand.
Wow.
And I was just shocked. I said, "I don't know what I'm looking at here, but I think it would be fun and very interesting to do something together." So about a year ago, we formed the company Nanotech, and we brought the IP, the technology, and the people together to, you know, have our mission of fireproofing the world and reducing energy consumption. And so we that's how it all, you know, started. I've been a serial entrepreneur for the last about 5.5 years. And I think Houston is the hub to be for people like myself that are wanting to jump out and do their own thing.
Very interesting, because I think when you talk about nanotechnology and material science, there's a lot of, I think it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other, you know, in terms of actual effect that these types of technology have. So what specifically does Nanotech focus on? And really, you know, what are the problems your technology is solving?
Yeah, so the primary benefit of the technology, it's a fireproofing technology. And there's really nothing out there like it. So we can embed molecules into various media. So the media could be paints, it can be polymers, drywall, fiberglass systems. And when we embed our molecules directly into those media, the media itself inherits the fireproofing and the insulation capabilities. So, and there's a lot of benefits that go along with it. It's eco-friendly. So we can, you know, spray it on basically any structure, any surface, and that surface or structure, whether it's a home, a business, or, you know, a lot of the infrastructure within California, we can fireproof that infrastructure so that it not only preserves the asset, but it also saves lives. And then the secondary benefit of it is it's also an insulating material. So just with a very minimal thickness of our material, with about a half an inch of our material, is the equivalent of about 30 inches of fiberglass. Wow. So it does two different things. It both fireproofs whatever it's on, and it also has insulating capabilities in one proprietary molecule.
So it sounds like a very multi-purposeful type of technology. For nanotech specifically, is there like a subset of clients or kind of an industry that you're targeting and really focusing on?
The one we're passionate about right now is the state of California. So we're working, as you know, California has had just a tremendous amount of wildfires year after year, and it only gets worse every year. So we're working with all of the major players in the state of California to not only fireproof, you know, the utility infrastructure, but also eventually homes and businesses. Our goal, if we're looking into the future, is really to fireproof that state. And we're working with the right players and the right people and the right companies to make it happen. And then the second area that we're, you know, very focused on is the commercial construction market. So because our molecule can be embedded into construction materials, you can make those construction materials both fireproof and insulative. So if you think about a world where our molecule is embedded into your traditional drywall, that drywall itself becomes fireproof and you no longer need insulation in your house. So the insulation in your house goes away because our molecule within the drywall is insulating it, and you don't have to worry about house fires anymore because our molecule is preventing the fire from actually going into the home. And it gives people time to get out, you know, gives organizations time to, you know, fireproof their commercial buildings. So it's not only the technology, but it's also the mission around the technology that we get really excited about.
I think the idea of fireproofing California, that's insane. That's like, sounds like such a huge goal, but it's also such a great mission. You know, if only, you know, the technology can eventually, you know, prevent hurricanes in Houston, bring that back. I'll accept California because that's such a lofty goal. So you mentioned that you're involved with the right people and companies to do that in California. So what kind of stage are you at on that particular mission?
Yeah, so we've passed the, you know, we're, to the best of our knowledge, we're the only material that has been able to pass the different tests and legislation that they now have within the state. And we're working with the utility providers there. We're working with the utility pole providers there. You know, there's millions and millions of utility poles that, you know, catch on fire once these, you know, flames go through, these fires go through. With our material coated on top of these poles, you know, not only is it preserving the infrastructure, you know, for the utility companies, but it also doesn't become a source of flame. And because it's environmentally friendly, you know, we're able to spray it on, you know, literally millions of utility poles and, you know, not have an issue when it comes to environmental concerns.
So obviously your work has not gone unnoticed because y'all were selected, Nanotech was selected as the first company to be a part of Halliburton Labs, Halliburton's new, incubator focused on startups. So before we talk a little bit about what that looks like today, tell me about the process of getting involved with Halliburton Labs and really joining and seeing that launch and come to fruition.
Yeah, so we're very fortunate to be the first startup within this incredible program. It's so different than the other programs that are out there. It's not just an accelerator. You're getting the horsepower of a Fortune 500 company behind you. So they have, what Halliburton Labs is they have a new completely separate entity called Halliburton Labs. The mission is to bring academics, to bring startups, to bring industry together to solve clean energy challenges. Not necessarily shift completely away from oil and gas, but recognize that things are changing you know, in the world and the environment when it comes to clean energy, and Halliburton, you know, really wants to play a part in that. So we were selected kind of as their, you know, I guess startup zero, for a lack of a better word, where they were still figuring things out, we're figuring things out, and now I believe they have their finalist day, so they have probably close to 15, 20, something like that, startups that have applied over the last month. And they'll be doing their pitch to the various people within Halliburton Labs, and then selected into the program for the 12-month duration starting in January.
That's so cool. You were the guinea pig for sure. But how has it really, I don't know if you have examples of how it has tangibly affected the company's growth being housed in Halliburton, because that's the other thing. It is your space. It's your headquarters too. So what's that been like?
Yeah. When we were first approached to be a part of it, you know, I had, just like any startup, you know, you have different concerns about joining a big company like Halliburton. You know, some of those concerns were, you know, around how fast could they react. You know, as a startup, we like to react very quickly. And we were concerned, you know, how fast can you actually turn the Halliburton ship? And we've been blown away. You know, the way that they react to us is actually faster than we can react to things. You know, they're the first people when we have an issue that we need solved. They're the first people that we actually reach out to. So we have a WhatsApp thread with them. And whenever we have an issue, you know, we're texting on the WhatsApp, hey, can you guys help us with this? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, they're able to help, you know, help us with whatever problem it is. Not only do we office out of there, you know, they have this beautiful laboratory. You know, it's over, I want to say 100,000 square feet, just decked out with everything that you could possibly imagine. So for a company like ourselves that has this technology, but we still need, you know, validation, we still need testing, it's been just an unbelievable relationship with them. I think it's truly game changing, because they take technologies like us and then they teach us how to scale it. And not only teach it, they will, you know, actually help us, you know, think about our plant, build our plant, give us the experts, activate their supply chain. So it really gives companies like us a tremendous tailwind when it comes to scaling from a product to, you know, going mass market globally.
That's so interesting. You know, when I get the press releases or you read the information on the website about, you know, an incubator or accelerator program, you see direct access to professionals. It's, oh, that means a WhatsApp group chat. That's I mean, I never knew like what the specifics were, but that's great to see that support. So do you have like a roll-off time with them, or are you firmly planted? What's the next phase of your collaboration with Halliburton?
Yeah, we'll be, because we were startup zero, you know, we'll be, you know, joining this first cohort that starts in January. And we'll have, you know, another 12 months with them starting in January. So basically the last 4 or 5 months was kind of a beta period for both of us. And the clock really starts ticking in January. So we'll have 12 months starting in January.
So the other news that I've recently covered on Innovation Map about nanotech is very recent. As of Monday, you announced that nanotech has closed its seed round of funding of $5 million. And I can only imagine the challenges you've faced fundraising for that during, you know, a global pandemic. But, you know, what did that look like? Obviously, seed round, your first entree into fundraising money for venture capital. So what was that like? And what does the new funds mean to you?
Yeah, you know, raising money in, you know, in any environment can be difficult. So every startup founder knows raising money is not something that none of us look forward to. It's kind of a necessary, you know, necessary evil to scale. When you add the pandemic issue, you know, right when we started raising, which was basically exactly when the pandemic hit, it adds different nuances to things. There's a lot of fear at first, both on the startup side and the investor side. So we started trying to raise, you know, around January or February. We had a ton of traction with a lot of different investors at that time. And then, you know, the world just kind of came to a standstill. And so what we did is we said, okay, let's continue building trust. Let's continue talking. And at the same time, let's really dig into the R&D and product development side. So when, you know, we have a light at the end of the tunnel, we not only have the relationships built, we not only have the trust built with the various investors, but we also have, you know, new IP, we've matured the product, and we're ready for, you know, the money to start coming in once the investors, you know, are comfortable. It didn't delay things too much. So I would say in May, we were in about six different data rooms with six different investors, both family offices as well as, you know, really large private equity companies. And at the end of the day, we had, you know, we were reviewing, you know, four term sheets kind of at the same time. And what it came down to was, you know, who we trusted. And, you know, I think any founder, any startup can appreciate once you bring in an outside investor, you know, your company dynamic changes a little bit. And so it's so important to really focus on that trust, because those first investors, especially in the seed round, are critical to your growth, you know, through the multi periods that you're going to go through. So we are, you know, super excited to, you know, be partnering with Ecliptic Capital out of Austin. We, you know, they really spent a ton of time with us. They got to know us. They got to know our products. They got to know the people. And we just trusted them. And once you get into that, you know, negotiation stage, once you get into the term sheet stage, it becomes less about what's on the paper and, you know, more about the people. And, you know, even though that there's, you know, back and forth in negotiations, you guys both sides know that they want to get the deal done. And because the pandemic gave us time to build that trust with them, it made it, you know, really nice when we closed. It was a celebration on both sides. So even though the pandemic made things difficult, by pivoting and really just building relationships over Zoom meetings, over Teams calls, you know, we would do happy hours virtually. It created a sense of camaraderie between us, the startup, and then them, the investor, which made things, I think, like, even more smoother. Because we didn't feel pressured to get things done immediately. We had time to build that trust.
From what I kind of understand from talking to people about fundraising during this time, it definitely seems like that seed round is probably one of the most challenging types of rounds to be doing in this time, because you are so limited on the interaction you can have with people nowadays. And so much of that is relationship building. So congratulations just on doing that. And I've met some of the people at Eclectic, and they are super cool and very data driven, which is so interesting. Everything that I've read from them is extremely interesting, and they're very Texas focused. So that's amazing. What do you see for your relationship and Nanotech's relationship with Ecliptic? What sort of support do you envision coming from them as you enter or continue this relationship that you all have developed?
Yeah, we were, you know, when we were starting our raise process, we set, you know, various criteria that we were looking for. And one of those criteria was, you know, expertise that we don't have. You know, we have expertise around the product. We have expertise, you know, in certain areas of, you know, marketing, business development. But when it comes to connections and scale up and taking the product global, we really wanted a partner that was beyond, you know, just the funding that was going to help us do that. So Ecliptic, you know, checked a lot of those boxes, and we got funded last week, so we're still kind of very early in this, but we envision a relationship where they're very involved. You know, we don't want an investor, you know, just giving us money and letting us, you know, figure things out. You know, there's too much at stake with us. It's not just the money that's at stake. You know, we truly believe that our product can save lives and protect infrastructure. Makes me lose a little bit of a sleep at night. You know, I certainly don't have all the answers. And so I like to surround myself with people that, you know, fill a lot of the gaps that I'm missing. And they fill some tremendous gaps that not only myself, but our founding team is missing. So we envision it as a true partnership, and, you know, they're just one of the team and they happen to have the money behind it.
That's awesome that you're able to complete that range of expertise that you need. I wonder, to segue into a question I love asking founders about, you know, setting up an HQ in Houston. You know, a lot of times founding of a company is just like, I'm founding a company in Houston. But I wonder if there are things, maybe even pros and cons, about being in Houston for your company's growth.
Yeah, I mean, Houston is the place to be. There's a lot of action going on. I did my MBA at Rice, and, you know, with Rice being the number one, you know, graduate entrepreneurship program, U of H being the number one undergraduate program, you have the ION, you have an entire city of brilliant scientists, engineers. I think, you know, if we put our hat on our future glasses on, I think Houston is the place to be, especially when it comes to hard sciences for entrepreneurship. There's so many things going on that if we weren't here, I can't picture another city that would be better. I mean, you have everything, you know, everything at your disposal. You have the talent at your disposal. You have, you know, facilities at your disposal. You have the connections through both universities as well as the accelerators and, you know, all the different organizations that are popping up. We're in an inflection point in Houston where, you know, people need to jump on board and ride it up, because the only way that it is going is up for sure.
I that's music to my ears as a lifelong Houstonian for sure. But I wonder whether it's, you know, being based in Houston or just at the time and place that your company is at now, what is something you do need more of? Is it, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but right now, either being based in Houston or being the stage that you're at, what's your priority and that you need to kind of hone in as you grow?
Yeah, with me, it's talent. You know, we just got our funding, and a large portion of that funding is going to be used for hiring talent. I think Houston, with, you know, the oil and gas, very technical skill sets that are here, as well as, you know, a lot of people potentially being on the bench right now, it's a huge opportunity for companies like us who are technical in nature and need those technical athletes to fill those roles, you know, to really shift from, you know, maybe oil and gas to things like material science, to like those hard science, you know, science fields, because the transition between, you know, petroleum engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical engineer in the oil and gas space, transitioning to other spaces within Houston, I think is a pretty straightforward transition. And that's what we're going to be looking for over the next 12 months, is finding those technical athletes that can join our team, because we do have a technical product that needs, you know, technical salespeople and technical resources. And, you know, probably there's no better place on the planet than Houston to find those resources.
Yeah, talent is definitely something I'm used to hearing on, you know, a need for startups, especially in Houston. Even though there is a lot of talent, a lot of talented people in the workforce in Houston, a lot of them are very used to the corporate lifestyle, not necessarily allured to the grungy, bare bones startup life. So is that something you anticipate experiencing as you really hunt, you know, for people, is luring away from a six-figure salary at a, you know, major corporation, into a completely different way of living?
Yeah, you know, I think it comes down to finding the people that were in corporate roles, maybe as entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. wanting to innovate inside an organization, people that wanted to create, you know, new technologies, new groups, new things inside of an organization, finding those people who have an appetite for risk, because if you're joining a startup, it's not a sexy lifestyle at all. You know, requires lots of work, lower salaries, but you know, tremendous upside if you play it correctly. And so finding the risk takers, the innovators, the technical talent that feel something inside of them, just like I felt something inside of me, 5 years ago, finding those people, and then bringing them on with clear expectations to say, hey, this is a risk, but we're going to align your incentive, to ride this up with us. And once you align those incentives, the six-figure salaries within corporate jobs are great. Stock options are great. But it's also about purpose, and it's also about creating. And if you can find purpose-driven talent that like to create, that like to build, I really think Houston is a place to be for those technical individuals to come join companies like ourselves.
Yeah, it's definitely, pandemic aside, and maybe in light of the pandemic, I definitely think there's been an evolution. I should have added that into my question, but, things have changed. The workforce present day versus 10 years ago is very different in Houston. So you're at a better place to do that than a decade or so ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're down the seed round. I'm sure you already have some ideas on the next round, your Series A. So what are you thinking for launching into that subsequent round?
Yeah. So one of the nice parts about, joining Ecliptic was that, they're an evergreen fund. So they, they'll be there for us as we need them. But also when we were doing our raise during the pandemic, like I mentioned, we were able to build those relationships. So we have, we have some, very strong relationships with other private equities, other family offices that could, fund Series A, Series B, and beyond. It's really up to us at this moment, right? You got to hit your metrics. You got to start making cash flow. You got to do the things you need to do. We've been given an incredible gift of this $5 million that really, really starts us off right. Combined with our partnership with Halliburton Labs, we probably have a better than 51% chance of succeeding because of those two things. And so with those tailwinds behind us, combined with the relationships that we've created through the pandemic with Ecliptic as well, I think we're pretty well positioned if we hit these financial metrics to start our Series A and Series B. 12 to 18 months from now, I think we'll be ready. Once we're at that point, the volume that we're dealing with is pretty substantial. So we plan on building, a very large plant here in Houston and employing as many Houstonians as we can possibly fit into it. And all of those are, kind of dreams, but we have a lot of the pieces in place with the things I mentioned to make those things happen. So now it's just getting down to executing, grinding away to make sure that we're very good stewards of the money that's been given to us.
That's awesome. And the idea of that plant in Houston is so exciting to see a startup grow into that. That's incredible to hear. So where do you, the classic question, but where do you see yourself in 5 years, maybe 10 years with the company?
Yeah, my drivers for becoming an entrepreneur are, less financially driven. I grew up in a missionary household. So when I graduated college making $46,000 a year, I was making way more than my dad ever made in his entire career. So I've always felt rich, kind of from day one. So I'm less financially motivated. It's nice to make sure that you're providing for your kids and your family. I want to create. I'm a creator. I'm a builder. So if I put my hat on and look in the future, we've built something special here, Natalie. We've built something that we can, pass down onto our kids and say, look, son, daddy fireproof this, or you see daddy's product in your house today, or you see daddy's product, protecting lives and protecting infrastructure. To me, the building of something special, especially when it comes to fireproofing and reducing energy consumption, I can't think of any better way to spend the next 10 years, than to work on those grand challenges.
That's so great. I mean, I love talking to entrepreneurs like yourself just for this reason, to see that passion and to have that impact-driven passion as well. I didn't know the part of, you know, your business. So I'm really excited to see that. And it was so nice talking to you. So I really appreciate your time today. This is exciting to see what y'all raised and where y'all are headed. So I can't wait to keep covering everything y'all do.
Well, thank you for spreading the word, Natalie. We appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Subscribe so you never miss an episode and follow along on innovationmap.com for all things Houston innovation.